This morning, terrorist attacks on the East Coast shattered the World Trade Center and damaged the Pentagon, and shattered America's sense of peace and security. As we pick up the pieces and mourn the dead, Americans are asking, how did this happen, and what do we do next? I'm Laura Kanoy. In the next hour, we'll update you on the situation, and we want your reaction. Join us for a special call-in program here on NHPR about the terrorist attacks and their aftermath. That's coming up right after the news here on NHPR. From NHPR, I'm Laura Kanoy with special coverage on the terrorist attacks from our studios in Concord. Welcome. We want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. It is nothing like Americans have ever seen or ever want to see again. Major terrorist attacks on our nation, thousands killed. Before our eyes, both huge towers of the World Trade Center in New York City collapsing after two planes hit them, and smoke pouring from the Pentagon as another plane crashed into it. Again, this is a special call-in program on NHPR. We want to hear how you feel, what's going through your mind as you hear this news, and what are your hopes and fears for the days and months ahead. Again, call us 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. With me in the studio is NHPR's John Greenberg, and soon we'll be hearing from New Hampshire Congressman Charlie Bass, Republican of the 2nd District. John, I have been, I was actually off today, so I've been in and out of the story all day. Just give us the broad scope of things. What happened?
Well, this is definitely a time when we've got more questions than answers. We know we've got four planes that went down. We know that the World Trade Towers were both attacked. Planes crashed into them.
These are commercial airlines.
We have airlines from American Airlines and United Airlines. These were hijacked planes.
So they had people on them.
They were. I've heard reports that on two of those planes they had about 90 to 100 people on board. The horror of this is quite amazing, and it's almost inconceivable.
It is inconceivable to think of all those people.
The World Trade Towers are down. They have collapsed. You could see the video footage was incredible of this wall of smoke and dust rushing through the streets and people dashing away from it. The president is at an undisclosed location, as we just heard. Congress is meeting in an undisclosed location, or when it meets.
What about the Pentagon, John?
The Pentagon, I forgot to mention, was also attacked. One of the planes crashed into the Pentagon, leaving a gaping hole in the wall.
I heard something else about Pennsylvania.
And, well, there was one plane that crashed in Pennsylvania.
Just on the runway or
well,
into
no,
a building?
The plane was in flight, but it didn't crash into any particular installation. But there you've got the four planes that have gone down. Clearly, this is a coordinated attack. And I think that at this point, we don't know who. We don't know the extent of our losses, but we know that they are profound. And that's where we are.
Okay. Let's go, John, right now to New Hampshire Congressman Charlie Bass. Congressman Bass, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Laura.
John just mentioned many unanswered questions, and I know you have them too. Do you have any answers for us? Do we know anything about who might possibly be behind this incredible thing?
No, not at this point. It'll take a little time, obviously, to unravel that, as it always does. The economic terrorist attack, which is what it was on the World Trade Center, will have an enormous impact on the global economy for quite some time to come. The fourth crash, which occurred in Pennsylvania, of course, this is all conjecture, may have been either the aircraft that at one point was headed for the Capitol, or it may be an effort to attack Camp David. Nobody really knows at this point. It's all conjecture. estimates at this point, which are very rough, indicate there may be as many as 10,000 fatalities in each building. And I have to tell you, Laura, as a we may have talked about this on the exchange in the past, but as a former member of Intelligence Committee, this is the event that we feared the most, that we worked, we tried to thwart, that we there have been many, many efforts like this to attack the United States and to kill civilians and to try to disrupt the global economy in order to create anarchy, that have been thwarted. And there are some exceptions, as you know, the coal bomb explosion, the embassy bombing, and, of course, the earlier World Trade Center bombing. This is a calamity of such enormity, though, that it will have ramifications, both economically as well as politically, for months and years to come. I don't think ever in the history of the United States has there been an attack as dreadful as this one.
Congressman, this is John Greenberg. May I ask you, in your discussions in the Intelligence Committee, did you ever receive a briefing that contemplated the use of commercial civilian aircraft hijacked as vehicles to deliver this destruction?
We received briefings on every conceivable mechanism of which this was certainly one of many different mechanisms that might have been used. I really can't discuss all the details of all the other efforts, but commercial airline hijacking has always been a primary mechanism of concern, and we spent a lot of time worrying about security procedures at airports and so on, and it interacted a little bit with the work that I did on Transportation Committee. Frankly, I think there's three things to think about right now. First and most importantly, obviously, are the victims and their families, and to pray for them as perhaps we never have before, how horrible the next few days are going to be for so many people in this country. Secondly, we need to remain calm and ultimately, if you will, disappoint these anarchists, these people that think that they can disrupt and destroy this country by killing tens of thousands of civilians. And thirdly, I think we have to review carefully what has happened here and ask the those of us who make policy, ask the American people to help us develop a system that will deter this kind of activity from ever happening again. For example, maybe we need a different policy now, or we ought to consider a different policy for the treatment of nations that aid and abet terrorists who are bent on destroying civilians in the United States. Obviously, we need to carefully review the security procedures that we have for air travel. But I think it's important to understand that commercial aircraft were the mechanism for the crime. They were not the crime itself. The people behind the crime might have done it some other way if it hadn't been in an aircraft, or it might have been some other mechanism,
well,
such as poisoning the water system.
Yeah, and
but we worry about this, and we have been largely successful in avoiding this kind of thing in the past. But terrorism has come to America and come to America with a sense of finality.
Well, it does seem amazing. You said these types of things have been planned for a while and we were able to thwart them.
Yes.
It does seem amazing that, you know, four separate planes in four different places were able to do this.
That's right. And I can't tell you why or how or anything. I know no more about it, frankly, than you do or anybody else. At this point, the Congress is dispersed. I'm in a staff member's apartment about four blocks from the Capitol. I went to a briefing over in the Capitol Police headquarters in which we were advised of a number of things, not the least of which was to expect to be notified in the next few hours that we would be convening somewhere. It hasn't been determined yet, and at some time, presumably to get a briefing and also to hear a message from the president and his national security team. And getting back to what I said earlier, we will be calm, we'll be pragmatic, and we will deal with the people that did this or perpetrated this crime swiftly and with some finality.
Congressman,
yes, John.
There's clearly you've been talking, when you're thinking about policy, you've been thinking of this in terms of an attack by foreigners upon the United States. Are you saying that based on some evidence that you've received? Might that be related to the threats that the Secret Service received that caused it to evacuate the White House earlier today?
We have, I guess the reason why I suspect it to be foreign rather than domestic in nature is because The nature of the threats that we faced before have been from foreign sources. It's hard for me to believe somebody would want to wreak this kind of havoc.
Well, Timothy McVeigh did. You know, he was domestic.
That's
but,
correct.
But go ahead,
no, I understand that. But this is a coordinated terrorist attack, and it's an economic attack. I don't want to get into the details of the Oklahoma City bombing at this point, there are different threads here. This is an entirely different type of terrorist attack. I think that you can draw similarities, not in terms of how it occurred, but justification or modus operandi to the earlier World Trade Center bombing. An enormous part of the global economy occurs in these two skyscrapers, or occurred, and the impact on the global economy will be dramatic. Make no mistake about it. This has been known for some time in the World Trade Center's buildings, not only because they made or created the skyline of New York, but also it was the center for such an enormous amount of international business. They were a natural target, and frankly, they were pretty well secured, but obviously not well enough. So, you know, we are where we are, and we have to make the best of it.
Congressman, we've seen a lot of security measures taking place around the country, buildings being shut down and evacuated. How far do you think that ought to go? We just saw a bulletin that said there is no state of emergency being declared in Massachusetts. But how far do you think we ought to go?
Well, I don't. I think that the threat will be reduced significantly as each minute, almost exponentially, as each minute or hour goes by. The only thing I think one has to worry about is some unrelated copycat-type terrorist activity occurring. But I think the coordinated attack, I certainly hope, is over at this point. So we need to remain on alert until things have calmed down and we've been able to secure all of our national assets and make sure there's nothing else planned, i.e., no more no bombs or aircraft or anything else that bad intentions.
Okay. Congressman Bass, there is so much more to talk about, but we will let you go. And
okay.
We'll be keeping up with you in the days ahead as more information unfolds. We really appreciate you joining
us. Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was Congressman Charlie Bass. He's a Republican representing New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District. I'm Laura Kanoy along with John Greenberg here on NHPR, and we want to hear from you. What is going through your mind as a result of this terrible, terrible thing? Join us 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We will be going back to NPR in just a moment for some information from the FBI. But, John, our listeners really want to talk about this. Let's just go right to the phones.
Let's hear from them.
And go to Hillsborough. Greg, you're with us. Welcome.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
I apologize for the connection. I'm on my cell phone.
Okay.
The most important thing, I think, here is we need to get rid of the cycle of violence. We will not benefit ourselves if we go and attack thousands of other people.
In terms of retaliation, you're saying,
Greg.
In terms
of retaliation, because all that does is make other people want to hurt us worse.
It keeps building up into a circle. I hear you, but on the other hand, how do you respond? You can't just let this thing go.
No, you have to find the people and bring them to justice.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wished at the beginning of this millennium that the religious leaders of the world had gotten together and said it's time to end the cycle of violence, which is fueled by vengeance.
Okay, great.
We have to forgive our enemies, punish them, but they need to be forgiven and not, you know, keep punching ourselves until one of us dies.
Okay, Greg, thank you for chiming in. And stay with us over the next couple of days. Bye-bye.
Okay.
And we're going to go to Pembroke. Amy's with us. Anne. Anne, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay. Basically, right now, I have two, maybe three relatives that work in a financial district in New York.
Yeah.
I don't care about the politics. What I would like to know is how do I get a hold to find out if they're all right?
Yeah.
At one point, NPR, somebody said, oh, there's a Morgan Stanley number, which one of them works for Morgan Stanley, but we didn't bring that number around. So I'm very frustrated that there's so much contemplation on stuff. We can wait for that for tomorrow. Today we need to find out how people are. And I know for me, when I'm in a place of feeling very powerless, I need to do.
Oh, gosh. Anne's cell phone went off.
We're very sorry. Anne, I hope that you're listening on the radio. We are working right now in our newsroom to gather whatever numbers we can. I do want to caution anyone who's looking for information. One of the biggest problems is that the phone lines into New York City are jammed. The mobile phone line networks are totally congested.
In fact, we just lost 3 or 4 phone calls right now, probably cell phone people.
Yeah. Well, that may or may not be related to the issues in New York City.
I'm saying the phone lines have been jammed everywhere. I've been trying to call Boston today, you know, no luck.
Yes. And so we will do what we can here to get information to you on these and other issues. We understand that, but also understand that the system, the telecommunication system into New York City and Washington, D.C., these systems are being strained to capacity right now.
John, you said that the newsroom has been gathering some phone numbers for people. Could Anne or anybody else call the newsroom and get a hold of some of those informational numbers?
We should set up a good process for that, and rather than make policy on the fly, let us do our work to gather those numbers, and we will announce on the air. I will also put it on our website as prominently as I can.
All right. So to Anne and anyone else, we're doing our best to get that information and those phone numbers, but boy, everything's jammed up, as you said. All the major cities seem to be jammed up. Let's go next to Senator Barnstead and talk to Gordon. Gordon, hi. You're on NHPR.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I was listening to Congressman Bass.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
and he says make peace with one's enemies. I'm not sure the American public realize that at least a year ago, main mosques in Gaza and places were actually preaching and publicizing on the television that to kill Americans or Jews was a blessed thing. I'm not at all sure how one reconciles these two philosophies. They're so far away. The coming 20 years ago, my partner was a Lebanese, highly educated Druze, 20 years ago, we were working in the Middle East, and he said that the coming clash will be between the extreme Islamic groups and the United States. Whether we like it or not, we are at war, and it's going to affect our lives dramatically, as it has done now.
Gordon.
There are 7 to 10 nations.
Gordon, this is John Greenberg. The question here seems to be that in recent memory, war has been between or among nations. And the nature of this attack, if we say we are at war, we're not at war with a particular country. We might be able to identify, as Congressman Bass did, that there are countries that abet terrorist organizations, and we can have certain attitudes and policies towards them. But if, in fact, and I repeat, if, in fact, this attack is foreign in nature, we don't have the same status as we do when people are talking about Pearl Harbor. The moment of the attack of Pearl Harbor, the Japanese representatives delivered a declaration of war in Washington, D.C. at precisely the moment when the bombs were being dropped on Pearl Harbor. But that was still government to government. But we don't have that here.
I think Gordon's point is that what I'm getting out of it is that the anger and hatred has been building up for a long time. So to him, anyway, this is no surprise because, as he says, you know, some people in the Middle East have been told that killing Americans is a good thing. I heard a story in NPR today that kids in Gaza were getting sweets as sort of a celebration type thing.
Absolutely.
As unbelievable as that sounds. So I think that's his point.
Absolutely. But tempting as it may be, let us not talk about the Middle East right now.
Because we don't know where it's from. No,
I
hear you on that.
Many more questions than
answers. I hear you on that. Absolutely. No, it's a great point. We don't know. We think it might be, but nobody knows at this point. Absolutely. Gordon, thank you for calling in. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy along with John Greenberg. It's a special call-in program today. We want to know what you think, how you feel, given what has happened. Let's go next to Hillsboro. Vincent's with us. Vincent, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Carol. My main concern is I'm hearing a lot about what we're going to do for the recourse to the perpetrators when we find them. But I think we need to focus a lot on what type of preventative measures we can take, beefing up our security in airports.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also concerned about the shipyards. Can they bring, boats, inconspicuous-looking boats in, maybe with dynamite or explosives, and start blowing our ships up next? I mean, what's next? I think we need to beef up security in this country, because these terrorists have been at this for years, and we're being too slack. I think this country is being slack. We need to wake up, smell the roses, and I agree with the last gentleman that was speaking. We are at war, whether we want to believe it or not.
You know, Vincent, it does make you realize just how vulnerable we are. You know, the United States has always sort of been set us apart, by these great oceans. But,
exactly.
But yeah, it could come in anyway. I'm feeling pretty vulnerable, Vincent.
Thank you. I am too. Well, thank you so much, girl, for taking the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And our next caller is from Melvin Village. It's Rich. Hi, Rich. Go ahead. You're on NHPR. Hi.
Thank you. I don't know. I come in a little late listening to this, but has anybody ever stopped to think that maybe this could have happened? This could have started right from our own country. Maybe it seems so big. It seems like it was so perfectly orchestrated. Is it possible that it could be our own people doing this? I mean, has anybody thought of that? It's just a thought.
Rich, we've been cautioning everyone not to jump to conclusions when we were talking to Congressman Bass. Clearly, his thinking was that this was foreign in nature. Gordon and Vincent both essentially believe that it is. But you're absolutely right. We don't know just yet. You could say that there were indications in the Oklahoma City bombing that, in fact, it must have been foreign in
nature. A lot of people thought it was initially.
Right. Well, that's what made me think of it, kind of.
Right.
It's just a thought that, we got to keep our minds open for any kind of possibility.
Right. We just don't know, Rich.
From anywhere.
Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye. And let's go next to Berlin. Janie's on the air. Hi, Janie.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My whole concern is I was listening to Governor Sheehan's address to her conference with the news media, and she had said something about the Canadian border remaining open. Now, I know as far as where I am so close to the border. If all the other states along the Canadian border stay closed, what's to keep, possibly whoever's ever responsible for this, just driving right up through the state?
Well, in fact, the border security has been tightened considerably. Out in Michigan, the tunnel between Detroit and Windsor, Ontario, has been closed to car traffic. The country is buttoning down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some of the steps, anyway, that you are talking about are being taken right now.
Okay.
Janie, thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go next to Lancaster, and Blanche is with us. Hi, Blanche. Go ahead.
Okay. What I want to comment on is what do you feel about the amount of money we spend on the military? We are the strongest military country in the world. We're stronger than the next 10 countries combined. Obviously, we are the best target just for that reason. I hope, and this is my comment, that this will put a kibosh on the idea of Star Wars, because Star Wars is not going to mean anything when it comes to this kind of attack. We need to focus on this kind of thing.
I heard somebody
whether
else
it's
say
domestic
that.
Or yeah. otherwise.
I heard somebody else say that today, John Greenberg, that this might really take some of the fire out of the Star Wars program, since Star Wars doesn't prevent this type of terrorism or germ warfare or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that I got a call today from an organization University of New Hampshire at Manchester. It's organizing a panel discussion, and they want to talk about missile defense and its relationship to these particular events. Absolutely, that issue is going to be at the forefront, but I think it's going to go deeper, because the nature of our national security policy has generally been to think about protecting ourselves and attacking our enemies. And this has been a policy of long standing, but there may in fact be limits to the extent to which we can protect ourselves.
Blanche, thank you for that phone call. John, I have some bad news. This tragedy has, it's obviously hit home already, but it's hit even more home. The pilot of one of the jets hijacked in this morning's terrorism attacks was from Stratham, New Hampshire. Officials at the Bethany Church in Greenland say congregation member Tom McGinnis of Stratham was the pilot of American Airlines Flight 11, which terrorists are believed to have crashed into the World Trade Center. And, of course, our hearts are going out to everybody right now, especially to Mr. McGinnis's family. By the way, a vigil will be held at the State House in Concord this afternoon at 5 o'clock in memory of those who died in this morning's terrorist attacks. Again, that's 5 o'clock here in Concord.
Also, we've been receiving word throughout the day. Many churches around the state are holding special services this afternoon and this evening for people to gather their thoughts and to react to this and absorb this bizarre reality. So we would encourage you that if you are a member of a congregation or any group, give them a call and see if, in fact, they are organizing something of this nature.
I think people just need to come together and hold each other and just...
Well, the fact of the matter is there's not a whole heck of a lot that we can do right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have not been personally attacked. There will be stories of losses of people that we may know closely or more distantly. Where we are right now is, unfortunately, we are playing the role of spectators, and that doesn't give us a lot to do.
Anne, who called earlier from Pembroke, who had some relatives in New York and was frustrated by the fact that she couldn't get through to find out how they were. We have some phone numbers here, so anybody who needs more information on relatives, loved ones, American Airlines number, 800-245-0999, 800-245-0999, United Airlines, 800-932-8555. That's United again, 800-932-8555. Your chances of getting in, you know, who knows, but there are the numbers. Also for Morgan Stanley World Trade Center, 888. I'm assuming that this is a number Morgan Stanley has set up to deal with the World Trade Center situation. 888-883-4391. And then if you'd like to give blood, the Red Cross really needs blood in New York City. Blood donors, 800-GIVE-LIFE. Again, 800-GIVE-LIFE. And, John, we really need to go back to the phones. We have a lot of people who need to talk. And let's go to Danville. And Lou is with us. Lou, welcome to NHPR. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm not sure where to start, but I am from the Jersey area. And my neighbor called me this morning and said, you know, turn on your TV,
mm-hmm.
and saw the explosion and realized that my brother was working in a building right across the street from the World Trade Center.
Is he all right? Do you
and
know?
He fortunately is okay. He was out of. He did call us. He said he saw the plane going, the second plane.
Wow.
They evacuated him. I guess he got stuck in the subway in an elevator for about an hour.
Ugh, how terrifying.
But finally got through, and he is safe, and I guess he's trying to get home from, he lives in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
But I also had another friend who was sitting at his desk on 9th Avenue and saw the plane fly directly into World Trade Center right in front of him. And both of them were, you know, just disturbed. My friend was just, you know, shocked. It was like he was, you know, hit, visibly hit.
It doesn't look real, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it's just he's, you know, he feels like he's been in a fight almost or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just struck by the comments that an earlier caller, David, I believe his name was, and, you know, he said we have to love our enemies, and I just wonder how he would feel if it had been a relative of his that mm-hmm. was so closely involved.
Yeah.
Lou, can I ask you just quickly?
Yes.
Obviously, your first reaction is fear, then relief that your brother is okay.
Yeah.
And, but as your feelings have, your thinking has moved through the afternoon, what are you focusing on right now?
Well, trying to, you know, not, you can't, trying to, I guess, put down that feeling of wanting to strike back and trying to get as much information so we can really pinpoint, you know, who is responsible at this point. You know, it's easy to jump off the handle and say those terrorists, you know, we're going to get those people. But we have no, you know, really we have no idea what's going to happen. And I guess it would be to maintain a correct response.
Okay. Lou, glad your brother's okay.
Thank you very much.
And glad you called. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. 1-800-892-6477. This is NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy along with John Greenberg, and we are taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. We want to know how you feel, what is going through your mind right now, as everyone sits back and tries to just take stock of what has happened at the World Trade Center and also at the Pentagon. 1-800-892-6477.
I just want to say that we have received word that there will be a briefing by the FBI at some point. We don't know exactly when, but if we do have to interrupt you, please understand that we are trying to also give you the most current information available. Also, Laura read some phone numbers. We will get those phone numbers to our front desk, and later on today, we will post those phone numbers on our website as well.
And the website is nhpr.org. The phone number here at the station, 603-228-8910. And let's go next to Northfield and talk to Chet. Hi, Chet. What's on your mind?
Hi. You know, we get involved in these other countries' problems. And if we would let these countries take care of their own problems, solve their own problems, we may not be in these situations. And now we have to do extra security, which should have been there in place already. We should stay out of these other people's problems themselves.
Okay. Chet, you're breaking up. I'm going to let you go, but I appreciate the call. Thanks. And let's go next to Dover, and Margaret's calling from Dover. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Laura. First of all, thanks to all of you news people who are, you know, changing all of your programming to accommodate the tragedy that we're having today. I'm really distracted by what's happened. I don't know at this point if there's anybody that I personally know, but in trying to make sense of it all and where it was such an orchestrated, very obviously orchestrated and coordinated event, I was struck by the fact that there were two United flights and two American flights, which makes four. And I don't know if these terrorists or the people who organized this planned it that way, but if you put the words together, it's United for American, which tends to lead me to believe that it could conceivably be something from inside the country as opposed to outside of the country, which really, really rattles me.
Yeah, we just have no idea, Margaret. We'll find out in the next couple of days, and do stay with us because we'll be looking again and again. We'll be getting all the information in as it comes. Thank you for that call. And Susan's calling from Portsmouth. Susan, you're the next person. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just wondering if I'm alone in thinking that it would have been actually more noble of Bush to have flown back to Washington and spoken from the White House and the Oval Office, had it well defended, and if that wouldn't have given the country more of a sense of stability instead of sort of hiding in a bunker and fleeing and giving terrorism a victory. It almost seems like Saddam Hussein hiding out instead of bravely resisting. But I may be alone in thinking that.
Well, Susan, you're not alone in thinking that, because the very first word that we received was that, in fact, President Bush would return to the White House for precisely the reasons that you gave. But obviously, the decision was made that security comes first and appearances come second. And that is precisely where we are right now.
It is odd to think of our president and our Congress in hiding.
I do not know of any other time.
Yeah,
it's certainly
unprecedented. Not that I blame them for hiding, mind you, because who knows if the White House and the Capitol, very obvious targets. So I'm not saying I blame them, but it is unprecedented.
Yeah, and this is really just speaks to all of the bizarre facts of this situation that we need to absorb. It is difficult to know how to respond to something that hasn't happened before.
Okay. Susan, thank you very much for calling. Amy's calling from Keene. Amy, welcome. This is NHPR. Hi.
Yes. Hi. I'm deeply disturbed by the assumption that everybody's first response and natural response is to retaliate. this whole action stems from people who are retaliating against perceived injustices, and we need to see another way to respond. And I think that the media needs to make sure that they cultivate an awareness that allows for peaceful resolutions and a response that is looking to heal the obvious wounds that we have, both within our country and, you know, with our relationships internationally.
All right, Amy.
It's a frightening thing, and we are also, I fear, on, you know, potentially on the brink of even greater, you know, destruction and devastation if we don't really stop and look for other responses.
Amy, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And stay with us over the next coming days.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. And let's go next to Concord, and Garrett is with us. Hi, Garrett. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that first and foremost, I think we should focus on, obviously, the emotional impact and helping get everyone through the emotional impact of what's occurred. But then I was also wondering if you had any thoughts on what the overall economic impact would be on the United States and the world through the coming days.
Well, Congressman Bass seemed to think it was huge, given, you know, the prominence of both New York City and the World Trade Center towers. But I think in terms of there's been such human loss right now that you know, people kind of put in that second.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, Garrett, thank you.
Thank you.
John?
Well, I mean, I think that the issue here of what the economic impact will be, that is absolutely one area where we should not let speculation run away with us. There has been an incredible blow, but if we're talking about a loss of information, most information is backed up, particularly in financial sectors. So we have to just wait and see. Again, not leap to conclusions.
Okay. And Garrett, thanks again. And let's go next to Larry. Hi, Larry. Go ahead. You're our next caller.
Hi, Laura. Thanks
Hi.
For my call. This is incredibly sad, I think, for the world.
Yeah.
That we've come to this point. But
yeah.
I think, for me, what it points up is that I think that the American people and I don't know about the American leadership, have been unrealistic in some ways in the way we've responded to the situation in the Middle East. We are a peaceful people, and we go way above what I think maybe people that are in a situation like Israel, where they're right there. People in this country have criticized Israel for assassinating terrorists, but I think Israel recognizes that they are at war. And I don't think we recognize that. There are people in the Middle East, as other callers have said, who don't think we should exist. They have demonized us. And I think we at least need to take that into account in our dealings with them and not pretend that these people have our goodwill at heart.
Larry, you're not alone in that feeling. We've had a number of callers who have wanted us to take a harder line. But I know that the policy issue remains the same. We are not battling a government. And the question then is, how do you battle a non-governmental enemy? We don't really have the rules for that. In fact, most of our rules make it extremely difficult to do that, as well as it is simply an ethical, moral issue as to how we should respond. In addition, we have also heard people say that type of attitude lies at the heart of our problems. If we weren't engaged in playing power politics around the world, then we wouldn't be the supporters of certain groups like Israel. And we wouldn't be the target of some of these attacks if, in fact, it is the Middle East. But
exactly.
I do not want to get ahead
right.
of the conversation.
Right.
We do not know the origins of this. We do not know. It could
That's
be
right.
domestic. So let us set that aside. I know it is part of the discussion, but we should not get ahead of ourselves.
And Larry, I appreciate the call, and I hope you stay with us over the next couple of days. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. Again, I'm Laura Kanoy. This is a special call-in program on NHPR. We just want to hear from you. What are you thinking? What's going through your mind as you hear the news that happened this morning, major terrorist attacks on our nation? 1-800-892-6477. John Greenberg, I just want to read the phone numbers again for people who may be seeking more information about family members. American Airlines, 800-245-0999. United, 800-932-8555. Again, United, 800-932-8555. Morgan Stanley has apparently set up a line about the World Trade Center, 888-883-4391. Again, 1-888-883-4391. And again, if you would like to give blood to help the victims who may have survived, the Red Cross says call 800-GIVE-LIFE. And let's go next to White River Junction, Vermont. Nancy's with us. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Laura.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here as an Episcopal priest, and actually I'm on my cell phone because our phone is ringing off the hook.
I bet.
Just like you had mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of houses of worship are, you know, responding with prayer services. You know, the person, I don't know who's there with you, but, you know, said how we're stuck in this feeling of all we're doing is spectators. A friend of mine said she wants to turn off the TV, but she just can't. And I think anybody of faith or anybody who just wants to come together, I really encourage them. We're having our service at 5:30 here in White River.
What's your church, Nancy?
It's St. Paul's Episcopal Church.
Nancy, I have a question
yeah.
for you. What can you say to people to make them feel better? Can you say anything to people to make them feel, you know, slightly better? What can you say to people tonight? What are you going to say?
Well, I was having...
Because your parishioners are going to say, how could God let this happen?
Right, exactly. And I try to help people look at their faith, not that like God has us as a bunch of puppets and God allows this and not that. But that we do live in a very broken and sinful world, and people do horrible things to one another. And from a Christian perspective, it's how can God enter this extreme tragedy and bring about some redemption? Our classic paradigm for that is Good Friday. And I think tonight I'm going to be using that text from the crucifixion that, you know, those people who witnessed that experience, it was darkness from noon to three, and there was utter despair. And what do we do when we're in the midst of utter despair? But, you know, cry out if we have to, my God, why have you forsaken us? To bring all our emotions and to allow that and to reassure people that God wants to hear that and that we need to support one another at this time. And there aren't easy answers.
Okay. Nancy, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And let's go next to Wolfboro. David is with us. Hi, David. You're on NHPR.
Hi, Laura. I'd like to address my comments to your co-host, who seems to think that because you can't necessarily identify a specific government that we are at war with, that we're not at war. You can certainly identify governments who support this type of activity. We've identified several, to include Syria, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, etc. Without that type of governmental support, these organizations couldn't exist on the level that they do. In the past, largely wars have been lost because the loser failed to comprehend the fact that the nature of war had changed. Use Cornwallis as an example in the Revolution. The way that we fought that war was not entirely civilized by their standards. They failed to adapt. They lost. We are at war now, and if we fail to adapt because the way our opponent fights is uncivilized, well, we could lose also.
Yeah, I hear you, David.
David, I just wanted to say that the fundamental point is that we are not fighting another government. And I guess my question to you would be, how would you respond? What would you have us do if we're not being confronted by the terms of war as we know them today by another government?
David, what do you think?
I think you're fighting multiple governments, and that's the problem. I think that if Congress does realize that the nature of war has changed, that what you'll see in the next few days is a declaration of war against the governments that I mentioned previously.
And
the way that you will do that is you will fight those governments, and you will do it one at a time or at the same time, you know, and you make it such that they are no longer capable of supporting state terrorism.
If we discover that certain governments, you know, if we discover who did it and what governments are behind it.
No, you're missing my point.
Okay.
You're missing my point. We know that there are governments who support state terrorism. Whether they supported this particular act at this point is a moot point.
You're saying go after them even
start
if
with
we know
one
that they didn't
and you go
do
after
it?
That government.
Well,
and
David,
you reach
David,
the
David.
Point where you make it untenable for any government to support this kind of activity.
Okay, I'm just trying to see if I got you right. You're saying that there are certain governments that we know support terrorism.
Correct.
So even if we don't know that they were behind this particular attack, go after them anyway.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks for calling.
You put a stop to the problem.
All right, thank you for calling, and again, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's go next to Manchester and talk to Mike. Mike is with us. Mike, hi, you're on NHPR.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
Sure.
I regularly listen to your program. I happen to be in the car and just caught this section of it today. What I'm a little disconcerted by is, as much as I tend to agree with David that was just on, I find many of your callers seem to be in a state of shock, some sort of disarray, and I think it really shows how little Americans have been paying attention to global politics in these recent years. And really, we've now joined many other countries that are being subjected to this kind of terrorism on a regular basis. They have ways of dealing with it we may or may not agree with, but we certainly have resources and allies who can provide us with some direction on where to go from here.
Mm-hmm. What kind of direction do you think we should follow, Mike?
Well, I personally am a big fan of Israelis' method dealing with it, which is to much like David suggested, make it untenable for the government that's terrorizing you to continue terrorizing you or anyone.
Let me, I'm not saying I agree or disagree with you, Mike, but let me turn it around. Israel does retaliate very quickly, and yet there just seems to be this, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So does it really work?
Well, unfortunately, what Israel has dealt with for a number of years now is actually more of a religious war than a regular type of conflict you would normally be engaging in. Israel's activities versus, I would say, what was done to the athletes in Munich at the Olympics. I think what you find these days is that very few countries are willing to take those sorts of actions against the Israelis, and the ones that are going to do those sort of actions against the Israelis no matter what happens. So if we have a kind of enemy going to attack us no matter what we do or say, well then, yes, I certainly think removing them from the global picture is a necessity.
Okay. Mike, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-800-892-6477. We're taking your comments, your thoughts today on NHPR. Let's go next to Rye and talk to Urs. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yes, you are.
Hi. Okay, go ahead. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. One of the things that struck me while watching the obviously the devastation on the newscast today is how vulnerable we have really become. And, you know, in Rye, we're about maybe 6 or 7 miles from a nuclear power plant. Even though I've been reading on the news that, you know, security has been increased there, plus at the Naval Shipyard in Portsmouth, I can't help but wonder that the nature of the attacks today all came from the air. And I was just curious whether or not, and I don't know if you can comment on this, have we done anything to protect us from a similar attack on a nuclear power plant? I mean, I'm thinking about what happened at Three Mile Island many, many years and the destruction that was caused in the Union at the Chernobyl plant. And it would seem to me that a successful attack on a plant like that would certainly leave a lot more destruction, a lot longer than some of the other activities that we've seen. Not that I'm discounting. I mean, they were all horrible, but that's just a particular concern of mine.
Well, Urs, you've just given me one more thing to worry about, because I hadn't thought of that. And it's a good point. John?
Well, I don't want to speak beyond my knowledge. There are safety precautions that are built into nuclear power plants, but I'm not going to speak for any of them. Urs, I think that you share the feeling of a lot of us in that we are spectacularly vulnerable. Both Laura and I worked in Washington, D.C. We've talked to the national security experts and the terrorist experts and so forth. We know the nature of the surface-to-air defense system that exists around the White House and around the Pentagon. And what has struck me is that those systems were powerless today. And if they are powerless, I can assure you that no nuclear power plant is equally well protected or would seem to be as vulnerable at least.
Earth, thank you for calling. Let's go to Concord, talk to Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just to echo what was just said, this is a very low-level type of technology attack. This was something, this wasn't a germ warfare. This wasn't what was anticipated. This was really something that was something from the 70s. And I think if you look at Israel and look at the police state that they basically set up, security and increased security is not an answer, and it doesn't work. What is interesting is to ask oneself why people are so angry that they are willing not only to kill themselves but to kill others. When someone is willing to kill themselves, I think humanity deserves the chance to ask the question, what has motivated them? It is so easy to simply dismiss them as insane. That doesn't get us anywhere. It just gets us into the cycle of violence and revenge. I am appalled at your previous caller who said he would prefer at this point to go to war. He obviously is not aware of the complex global political system that the United States tries to propagate with its, I must say, heavy-handed policies around the globe. The U.S. population is woefully undereducated about many of the United States' positions. For example, the recent revelations about Kissinger's involvement in Chile, the complicity in not looking into the genocide or not acting upon the genocide in Rwanda, let alone looking at our involvement in the Middle East.
Jane, you know, I was struck by a similar feeling, is that how could someone hate so much that they'd be willing to kill themselves and thousands of people? It just boggles my mind.
We are doing ourselves a huge disservice to not investigate, to say all of those people are simply insane.
Okay, Jane, we're closing out the hour, so we need to let you go. John, did you have a quick comment?
Well, Laura, it does seem to me that even in this brief hour, we have heard two opinions, a collection of opinions where there is a huge gulf. One where people say that our policies of the past have led to this problem, and others say that what we need to do with our policies is make them stronger and go after our presumed attackers harder than ever. I believe that what we need to be looking for is a sense of whether or not that debate will be fully joined in this country, because that is going to be at the heart of it. Do we look at the questions of where our policy has led us, and how do we look at our response going forward?
You know, I don't even feel, just personally, ready to even talk about policy or how we should change it. I'm just so devastated by the loss of all those people and their families that I can't even think beyond that point right now.
Well, I think that a lot of people are with you. It is an amazing situation right now, but it is very clear that we have in front of us a very profound debate over our foreign policy.
Okay. We will be keeping you updated, obviously, throughout the rest of the day and the evening, tomorrow, throughout the week. So stay with NPR and NHPR as we continue coverage of this terrible crisis, including more conversation with you tomorrow on The Exchange at 9 o'clock. I'm Laura Kanoy along with John Greenberg. This is NHPR.
Good afternoon. It's almost 4 o'clock. You're listening to special news coverage. This is NHPR, news and information for the Granite State. Stay right here. All Things Considered is coming up in just a moment from NPR. We'll have more special coverage of the attack in the United States, the attacks. This is NHPR, news and information for the Granite State at WEVO 89.1 in Concord and Manchester, 90.3 in Nashua, 104.3 in Dover, 91.3 in Littleton, WEVH 91.3 in Hanover and the Upper Valley, WEVN 90.7 in Keene and southwest New Hampshire, WEVC 107.1 in Gorham and in Berlin, and on the web at nhpr.org. Don't forget, you can go to that website to get important phone numbers, or you can call 603-228-8910. 10.